Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Today, gardening with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. Morning, Roberta.
Good morning, Mindy.
We got some much-needed rain. I know I was looking at some of my perennials sort of drooping a little bit, and I think this week I got 2 inches with the other rainstorm and almost 2 inches yesterday.
Wow, you got more than I did. I got 3/4 of an inch yesterday, and the previous storm missed me almost completely.
I know. It's funny how it's hit or miss, right? I'm just thankful we didn't get the rain that Connecticut got. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my goodness.
Crazy. Yeah.
It's not been bad this summer. I've only had to drag the hoses around a couple of times. I might have left it a little too long in some sections, and they got a little dry, but... better than last year when it rained every third day, and the year before where it seemed like I had to drag the hoses around several times a week.
Yeah. I watered my containers, but other than that, I did not pull out the sprinklers at all this summer.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah. I'm hearing some varying reports on tomatoes. Some are saying they're having a great season. Others are saying their smaller tomatoes have done well, but not the larger types. And I guess it just depends where you are. I'm in that category of my cherry tomatoes have done fabulous. They're still going strong. My other tomatoes, just okay.
Well, I have to say it's a better year than last year when I had the worst crop of my gardening career, I think. I'm already canning tomato puree, so I'm ahead of last year. I think it's a decent year. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. Cherry tomatoes are just gangbusters.
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord. They came in early, and they're still going strong.
Yeah.
My regular tomatoes were a little bit later to ripen and be ready to pick, but now they're also coming on strong. The problem is by this time of year, the foliar disease is also coming on strong, and the season will be over soon, at least for me, not for everyone.
Yeah, I was going to say, I only planted 3 tomato plants this year, and one of them, as soon as that, it got the blight, so as soon as that last tomato was ready to pick, I pulled the whole thing out. Yeah, so, because I don't want it to spread to my cherries and the other one. If you have gardening questions this morning or stories, advice, give us a call at 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Lynn in Marston's Mills writes, 2 quick things. First of all, a shout out to the master gardeners. Spoke with a lovely and helpful woman at the fair who helped me identify tomato hornworms, yuck, and I was able to pick and squish them so that my plants were able to recover enough to still give a little bit of a harvest. I was shocked at how well these worms, some as big as my finger, were blending in. That's so true. Second, she says, I also got squash vine borers this year, which took out almost all my summer and winter squashes. I'm wondering what, if anything, can be done next year to prevent this at planting and during the season. I don't know if it's relevant, but I start everything from seed. I'll be on the lookout for tomato worms earlier, but needless to say, it was a very frustrating gardening year for our family.
I can understand that. The thing about tomato worms is they're there long before they get to be the size of your finger. So you have to start looking early. And what I recommend is instead of trying to look for the little tiny caterpillars, because they're quite small with a horn, and their color blends in beautifully with the foliage, the thing to look for is frass, which is a polite word for caterpillar excrement. Mm-hmm. And their frass, it comes in the form of pellets. Very distinctive pellets, and you can find it on foliage. You can find it falling to the ground. The bigger the caterpillar gets, obviously, the bigger the frass gets. And when you start seeing frass, then actually start examining the foliage closer for the caterpillars. They are remarkable caterpillars. They do get quite large, and they can defoliate tomatoes very quickly. And they can even eat green tomatoes. They'll chomp on them. Easy to hand pick and either remove somewhere else or squash them. You can also use, when they're small, Cap'n Jack's dead bug, the spinosad, works quite well on them, so you could use that earlier in the season. Squash bug is a tougher, the vine borer is a tougher critter to manage. If you understand the life cycle, it helps a little bit. The adult overwinters in the ground as a chrysalis and emerges usually in late June, early July, and spends the month of July laying eggs, usually on the base of the stem of summer squash and winter squash, except for butternut. They don't seem to attack butternut. You can use something like BT or Cap'n Jack's and spray it on the stems early in the morning before squash blossoms open. If you miss a week or two, you lose that advantage, and you can still get the vine borer. Some people like to pile dirt over the joints of the stem where the leaves attach in hopes that you can get some adventitious rooting going on, and the vine will continue to grow after it's been infested. So it's always a crapshoot. By the time mine succumb, I've had my fill of zucchini and summer squash for the year, so I'm not too upset about it.
So it sounds like you might find a different spot to plant them. If they're in the ground, maybe plant them somewhere else in the spring?
Well, they fly.
No, they fly. Okay, yeah.
Right.
There you
right.
go. Yeah.
And insects are interesting in that they pick up all plants give off chemical scents that insects can pick up, and it helps them locate their preferred food. So even if you plant them in a different part of the garden, the insect can still find it.
We'll find it, yeah. Yep. My cucumbers were very slow to produce any fruit. I was wondering, what's going on here? Now they seem to be doing better. I'm getting some fruit, but now Amy's cucumber, she's been bringing cucumbers into the radio stations because she's got so many of them. And I'm wondering, is it because I put it in a container?
I was overwhelmed with cucumbers. Mine are all in the ground. I find a lot of vegetables grow perfectly well in containers. I find cucumbers tend to do better in the ground. So I have no scientific evidence of that. That's just a gut feeling, having grown them in both manners. But I think they do better in the ground. So I think that might have had an effect.
Yeah. And I've talked about, you know, the cobra beans that Carl and Acushnet sent us.
Yes.
They are fabulous. I'm sold. I'm going to be planting these things every year. Next year, I think I need a bigger trellis.
But, he did warn us.
Oh, they are just so fabulous. And my niece was visiting with her family, and my grandniece and my grandson are the same age. I sent them out there to do some harvesting. You know, kids love to harvest. And they came in the house, and I said, where are the green beans? And my grandniece said, we ate them.
Oh, that's very funny. They must be really good.
Well, I said, you ate them, because Aunt Jackson is not eating green beans. I know that.
Yeah.
And then something is eating my yellow beans, which are my favorite. And it has to be something that can only reach up halfway, because it's like the bottom half of the yellow beans has been eaten by something. Maybe chipmunks?
Voles.
Voles. Yeah, terrible.
I used to have a terrible problem with them down at the demonstration garden, and I would go to pick green beans, and it's just as you described. The bottom half of the bean was missing. So they tunnel in the ground, and they would come up in the bean patch and just feast away on the green beans.
Yeah. Oh. Well, at least I have my green beans instead of my yellow beans. All right. Dan wants to grow hydrangeas, and he's wondering, when is the best time to plant them, and how should he prepare for that?
It depends on what kind of hydrangea he wants to grow. If it's one of the macrophyllas, the blue hydrangeas, they prefer some morning sun and afternoon shade. So that would be the type of location, or dappled sunlight all day long. They like a fair amount of organic matter in the soil. So if the soil is very sandy, then incorporate in some compost, not just in the planting hole, but in the whole area where the roots are going to grow out into. Keep them well watered until they become established, and you should have hydrangeas going strong. Mm-hmm. If it's the hydrangea paniculata or the arborescens, the white hydrangeas, they can take full sun pretty much any time of day and actually do best with more sun than shade. Yeah. But the planting technique would be the same.
And I'll say, if you are trying to fill a big space, the limelight hydrangea, I love my limelight. It is just so gorgeous.
They are lovely, and they do get big.
They do get big, yeah. Now, I have divided my paniculatas before, but I've never tried that with my blue hydrangeas, which I keep threatening to pull out, which I still haven't done. But they're enormous. Can you pull them out and divide them?
I have not done it personally, but I do know people who have done that by basically splitting the crown in two. In fact, I have a hydrangea that was given to me by someone, and it was one of his divisions. Mm. So it is possible. It depends on the weather. You don't mm-hmm. want to do anything when it's really hot.
Right.
Of course, today is, we're getting a taste of September. I'm wearing a flannel shirt. So today would be fine, but it's going to get warm again before,
right.
Too long. So I would probably wait till early to mid-September to do something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. And then the blue hydrangeas, if you put them in too much sun, they're just going to, the flowers will get all brown and they dry up pretty quick.
And it's particularly the afternoon sun. Mm-hmm. I find mine that are in the morning sun till maybe 11:30, 12 o'clock, no problem. Those that are in afternoon sun just wilt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They spring back, once the sun goes beyond them, but they do not like that hot afternoon sun. Oh, neither do I, so.
My little garden there. I planted a jalapeno pepper plant, which I usually plant. I have only gotten 3 peppers on that thing. Lots of flowers, but no, only 3 peppers developed. Is it a pollinating thing problem, do you think?
I would think it might be. My peppers are doing pretty well. I didn't plant jalapenos because I can't eat really hot stuff, but I did plant poblanos.
Oh, I love those.
And I have a great crop of poblanos.
Yeah. So I guess it's just
it's full sun.
Yeah, it's in full sun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I keep them a little bit on the dry side, not overwatering them, and they do well. I have to say, this year, normally I top dress my beds in spring with the Coast of Maine lobster compost, and I've always loved it. And this year I thought I'd just try something different, so I top dressed my beds with bumper crop. Oh, my Lord.
Ooh.
That was just amazing in the response of the plants. I literally had one cherry tomato that the vine was 10 feet long.
Wow.
It came out of the top of the cage and spilled down the side and just, it's still going.
What is bumper? I don't know what bumper crop is. What is that?
It's a soil amendment. It's got lots of good stuff in it. And it's a little bit lighter than the Coast of Maine lobster compost. It was a little bit easier to spread, and I just put a bag on each bed, and the plants love it. So
wow.
I might do that again next year.
I've gotten that Tiger Bloom for my dahlias, the fertilizer, because the dahlias, they don't want to have too much nitrogen, or you won't get that many flowers. And I thought, I'm going to try these in the containers. Oh my goodness, what a difference! The lantana that was starting to look a little leggy, and it just filled right in. That was just, it's fabulous for just about any flower, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
I love dahlias too, and mine are all finally, I planted them very late this year, and they're finally now all coming into bloom, and I love it, and they'll be blooming,
right till frost. Yeah, I had one that bloomed early, and the other ones are just, I can see the flowers starting to come out now, but they're a little bit late. Usually they bloom a little earlier than this for me, but that's okay.
Yep.
We're getting to the end here where not a lot in bloom, so we welcome those dahlias. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org, and we'll have more after a break. You're listening to The Point. It's Gardening This Morning with horticulturist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our number for your garden questions, stories. If you have some successes this season, we'd love to hear it. 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Rick is giving us a call from Eastham. Hi, Rick.
Hi. Hi, Mindy. Thanks for the thanks for your show.
Sure.
I grew a bitter melon from seeds in a pot this year, and it's growing really well in my garden. It's spread all over, but I've only gotten two fruits from it, two winter melons, both really big and beautiful, but everything else is just like flowers.
Mm.
And I'm wondering if it's a pollination issue, or maybe it needs another winter melon plant, or I don't know. Anyway,
yeah.
I wondered if you had any.
Yeah. Roberta, what do you think?
Yeah, all members of the squash family, of which melons and cucumbers are a part, produce generally both male and female flowers on the same plant. So you don't necessarily need another plant for cross-pollination, although it never hurts to have more flowers around. Some people recommend in growing cucumbers and in growing melons that you actually start pruning off the side shoots early in the growth cycle, sort of like taking the suckers out of a tomato. If you look at how these grow, they have the primary stem that comes out of the ground, and then a little ways further down the stem, they start sending out secondary stems. And generally, people recommend, I haven't grown this particular melon, so I can't speak personally, but I have seen people recommend that you take out a lot of those secondary stems and concentrate the energy on that one main stem instead of sending all the energy to other stems. And I haven't done it personally, that you get more fruit that way. Mm. So that might be something to try next year.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah,
I'll do it.
Thanks for the question, Rick. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yep, Greg is calling from Eastham. Hi, Greg.
Good morning. Thank you so much. I love the show. I've had an abundant grape crop this year, surprisingly, but I developed black spots on the grapes, and I kept spraying with neem oil and Captain Jack's, and my grapes now are just covered with the black spots.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, there is a couple of different grape diseases that can do that. Neem oil isn't. I'm not relying on neem oil for disease control. Neem Max, which is a cold processed product of neem, tends to be more effective than just straight neem. But if you really want a good crop, you might look to some of the other fungicides that are available. And there are organic fungicides that I think would do a better job than the neem.
Is it too late for this year?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, Greg, sorry about that.
And is it possible to let the grapes come up next year and protect them, or does the fungus become embedded in the plants?
No, it's an annual type of thing. It's not systemic in the plant itself. So generally, you would start when the foliage first comes out, and because different disease organisms initially begin usually on the foliage somewhere, and then the spores infect the fruit as well. So for any fruit in general that's really prone to a disease, you want to set up some sort of regular application right throughout the season. And you can do that with an organic fungicide as well as a traditional fungicide.
Greg, good luck with that. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks
so
for the call. All right, Craig is calling from Wellfleet. Hi, Craig.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have a question about figs. My fig tree has got a lot of figs on it, as usual, but this year they're smaller than normal. Hmm. Is there some reason for it? It might be the abundance of water, or is there some way that I can encourage them to get bigger between now and harvest time?
Is this in the ground or in a pot?
In a ground.
Yeah. I just maintain soil moisture evenly. Every year is different. I have not been an amazingly successful fig grower, either in the ground or a pot, although the one I have in a pot currently is doing quite well. And it also has a lot of small figs on it. So I think it's a matter of when the particular plant starts producing the fruit. So I would just wait, you know, maybe a little fertilizer at this point, not heavy, very light, and just keep it well watered and see what happens.
Hmm. What type of fertilizer?
Whatever your choice is, I would go with low nitrogen. So if you look at the three numbers, you would like the second number to be higher than the first number.
Craig, good luck with
okay,
that.
Great.
Yeah. Jenny, how is your fig tree doing well this year? Yeah, she's thumbs up. Are your fruit the normal size? They're down. Oh, Jenny says her fruit's smaller as well. So okay,
yeah.
Maybe it's just the season. That's a thing you never know, right? You think you've got something going really well in your garden, and next year it all changes. Yeah.
Well, you know, it was really, we had those like 2, maybe 3 weeks where temperatures were just so hot. And also the humidity was through the roof. And I know things like tomatoes and peppers, the flowers are fertilized within a temperature range. And when it gets above that range, the flowers generally are not pollinated and just drop off.
Yeah.
Whether that is similar to figs, that I don't know. But the weather is different every year and impacts our plants in a different way that I don't always understand.
Yeah.
So 1 year you have a bumper crop, the next year, maybe not.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Susan writes, my New Guinea impatiens are showing signs of stress in half of the hanging baskets. Why?
Probably because they've been in the hanging basket since, you know, the grower potted them up probably sometime in May.
Mm-hmm.
They've depleted the nutrients in the soil. It may be the root system has grown so much that water tends to drain out of the pot instead of being retained in the pot. There can be any number of reasons why they start to look a little off mm-hmm. by this time of year. It is, what, the 20th of August?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I got these hanging baskets of petunias early in season because they were just such a good deal. And I normally don't like an entire basket of petunias because you have to deadhead them.
Yeah.
And then after a while, they started getting kind of leggy and looking yucky. So
yep.
I cut them way back, the whole pot, three of them. I cut them all back, fertilized them with my Tiger Bloom, and now they're starting to look great again.
Well, the thing with these hanging baskets, generally if you're, you know, getting them from a garden center or you're even potting them up yourself, you're doing it sometime in May.
Right.
You know, so this is some ways down the road, and they've depleted what's in that original potting soil. So if you want your hanging baskets and containers, if you plant lots of mixed containers, mm-hmm. to continue looking good, it's a good idea to maybe sacrifice some of the plant sometime in late July. Give them a haircut and fertilize them. And for a couple of weeks, you're going to go, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. They really don't look that
yeah.
great. And then they start growing again.
Yes, that's
and
right.
And they look beautiful, and they'll look beautiful through September.
Sometimes, you know, I had some mix it up in some of my containers, and mm-hmm. I had planted some dianthus last year, thinking it was supposed to be the annual type, but I went, that stayed green most of the winter. We had a mild winter, and then they bloomed again in the spring, and
nice.
They all look great. And then, of course, as they started, but they were white, I cut them way back, and now they're blooming again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. A little surprise.
Yes, and it's nice when we can have that in the
yeah.
garden.
Bob is calling from North Truro. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. How are you?
Great.
Good. I have a espalier tree, apple tree, that is about 7 years old. It's been, the first few years were peaked. Last year, I probably got 100 apples off of it. And this year, not a blossom and not a apple. It's sort of, so two things have happened. It's got a sort of a funny looking, oh, lots of foliage growth though this year. Mm-hmm. But it's got a funny looking, like spotted, tiny spots, white spots all over the leaves. I put in an irrigation system this year. I'm wondering if it got overwatered. What I've understood is I'm supposed to do some kind of a treatment in the spring, but it, when? Before the blossoms? When it's bare? We didn't get one blossom this year.
Yeah. Some varieties of apples are notorious biennial bearers. And if they've had a year where they just have an amazing bumper crop, which sounds like what you had last year, the following year, mm-hmm. they're very little, or mm-hmm. if anything, in your case. So I think it's more a factor of the fact that it literally produced too many apples last year, and it's recovering this year. Mm-hmm. What commercial people do in apple orchards for those varieties that are known to be biennial bearers is they thin the apples out in a given year so they don't allow the plant to bear every fruit that forms.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe what's happened here. So what I would do next spring is do you prune in early spring?
Mm-hmm.
I just did a pruning last week,
okay.
And then I did one in the wind, and then I'll do whatever seems logical in the midwinter.
Bob, I had something similar happen with my apple trees in that one year, and this was really, it was the winter moths that decimated the blossoms, and I literally had one apple on the tree, which was very unusual. But I finally took my apple trees down. I had a couple big, I'm not using them that much, and I have to pick up all those apples rotting on the ground in the fall, so I'm putting something else there. But but it, if you're an apple lover, it is a nice thing to have.
It is.
I love my espaliered tree.
Do your necessary pruning in spring. Fertilize them with a good regular fertilizer, and same with the gentleman that called about his grapes. Mm-hmm. Apples are prone to a number of foliar and fruit diseases, mm-hmm. so you might do some sort of regular spray schedule with a fungicide, either mm-hmm. organic or otherwise. But if it does produce a lot of blossoms and tiny fruit, you want to thin them out. Mm-hmm. You don't let every little fruit bear.
Yeah. All right, Bob, good luck. Thanks.
I had five apple pies last year and none this year. It's going to break my heart. I'm going to have to go and buy them.
Bob, good luck. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you. Yep. Thank you.
Christy's calling from Harwich. Hi, Christy.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Can I use water from my dehumidifier to water my garden?
Yes. You carry that. It only has a 2-gallon reservoir, and I don't have it draining into anything in the basement, so I have to carry the container out every morning, and I use it to water my containers with. But you can water containers, you can water plants in the ground. Sure, it's great water to use.
Yeah, Christy, thanks for the call.
Terrific, thank you.
866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. I have a couple of holly trees that I want to trim, and usually I do it in the spring. And I'm looking at that thinking, maybe I don't want to do it in September. I'm just worried about anything getting in there, bugs or whatever. Is it better to do it in the spring?
A holly?
Yeah.
When I do prune, I don't usually prune on a regular basis. I do it right before Christmas and use the foliage in decorations.
That's a good idea. Yeah, it's gotten a little bit, it's more of the undergrowth area that I like to prune out because it gets a little full.
Yeah, so you're pruning to control size.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah,
at least on the bottom, not on the top, yeah.
You could do it in the spring or you could do it in the winter. Any time is fine. I probably would not do it in the fall.
Okay, that's what I thought. All right, good. Good to know that. All right, Deborah's giving us a call from Brewster. Hi, Deborah.
Good morning. How's everyone?
Great.
I planted a magnolia tree in the spring and it did very well. Until the last couple of weeks, noticed some of the leaves are getting a golden brown with round circles in them.
That sounds like some sort of foliar disorder. You might want to take some of the representative leaves, not something that's totally dead, but something that's showing a progression of symptoms. Take it by the Master Gardener office at the Extension Service, and they can take a look at it and maybe tell you exactly what it is. But it does sound like some sort of foliar disorder. It's late in the season to try and do anything about that. So I would just, as the leaves fall off, just rake them up and dispose of them. And possibly next spring, as foliage is emerging, you might want to use something on it.
Thanks, Deborah.
Okay. Thanks. All right. Very good. Thanks so much.
Thanks for the call. I have a magnolia tree, and the funniest thing about this, I don't know when this started. It's a number of years ago now. It blooms beautifully in the spring. It's absolutely gorgeous. And then I get a second bloom, not as full, just a little bit here and there around the entire tree in the summer.
Nice. I'd enjoy that.
I know. I didn't know that I would do that. I don't know why it does that, but I'm not complaining.
Yes. You know, plants are funny. Every now and then you'll find rhododendrons popping out random blooms in late summer. Mm-hmm. It's not a full bloom. The whole plant isn't blooming as they do in spring. But just here and there, you have some nice, pretty pink blossoms. Yeah. Very strange.
Yeah. All right. Cindy says, going back to blight on tomatoes, I have it on my cherry tomato plant, even after spraying it with copper fungicide when I first planted it. Fortunately, so far, it hasn't spread to my other tomato plant. I'm removing the infected leaves, but it is spreading fast. Is there anything else that may at least slow it down?
You know, if she only sprayed once, that's not going to protect the plants for the whole year.
Right.
Because they put out new growth that has not been contacted by the spray. So as with any attempt to prevent plant disease, and the emphasis on prevent, the fungicides, whether they're organic or synthetic, are preventative in nature, not curative. And so if you're going to be spraying, you probably need to do it approximately every 7 to 10 days. And that means right through the summer.
Mm. All right. Eric is calling from Sandwich. Hi, Eric.
Good morning, Mindy. Good morning, Roberta.
Good morning.
I have a number of perennials, mostly varieties of echinacea and Russian sage, that where I've planted them, they're doing poorly. And I've kept them in the same place, hoping for a different outcome each year, and each year they do poorly. Mm-hmm. And my question is, if I now, after several years of them having poor growth, if I put them in a better place or mend the soil, would I expect a different outcome? Or have they been kind of damaged from kind of being in that particular location for a number of years?
Can you describe the location? What's the sun exposure? What's the soil like?
It gets full sun, I would say, at least 6 hours. You know, I've planted sage in a variety of locations. You know, I always see it kind of on the roadside doing great, being neglected. But I've put it in, you know, organic soil and sandy soil, and but typically at least 6 hours of sun. But these varieties, they're not the typical purple coneflower, but other varieties of echinacea have just not done anything. And I'm just wondering if I place them somewhere else, do they still have the wherewithal to grow and be successful, or have I kind of tainted their ability to grow fully at this point?
I would say you could move them, and they should do fine. 6 hours is maybe the minimum amount of sunlight for both of those plants. They would really do better with 8 to 10 hours of good direct sunlight throughout the day. So that may be a factor. You could also dig them up. You know, we're coming into a time of year where if you need to do some renovation I usually just put out a tarp. I literally dig up plants from a particular bed and then rework the soil. Plants that have been in the same soil for a number of years, the soil becomes, over time, somewhat depleted, so you could renovate it. Or if you have a location that gets more sun, I think that might be your limiting factor here, then certainly transplant them to an area with about 8 to 10 hours of sun if you have it.
Yeah. Eric, thanks for the call.
Unfortunately, my trees are growing and my sunny gardens are becoming partially sunny gardens.
Same thing happening with me, Eric. It's like I had some beautiful phlox, and then Aaron, noticing the phlox is creeping more and more towards the sun as these branches of the trees are, and there's nothing underneath there now. So yes, I'm going to have to do some tree trimming of some of these branches so I can get some sun back in there. But Eric, good luck with that. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after break. You're listening to The Point. It's Gardening This Morning with horticulturist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Carl's calling from Acushnet. Hi, Carl.
Hi. Yeah, I'm just calling you with a quick update. I changed sides in my garden where I put my tomatoes, and I put in healthy plants, and yet they all seem to get stunted. The fruit is terrible looking, blemished, and now I'm getting all the yellow leaves and stuff. And yet a plant I put in the back garden where I've never grown tomatoes before is perfect and healthy and everything you could ask for. So I guess the lesson from this year is you've got to move where you have things and move them far away, not just 25 feet away or so. It seems like the diseases are in the ground and really hit you hard.
Yeah, the tomatoes, you want to move those around, right, Roberta?
Yes. Generally, you know, if you look at commercial agriculture, they practice crop rotation where they don't plant the same plant or family in the ground for probably a minimum of 3 years. We probably don't have enough room to be quite that generous with the time. But yes, the one that's doing well in your garden is in soil that hasn't had tomatoes in it before. So the organisms that cause the leaf spotting and the fruit rotting are probably not present in the soil. Sounds like you've hit on something that you might want to pay attention to and do next year. Put your tomatoes in an area, if you have it, where they haven't grown before.
Yeah. You know, last year I had a tomato that I couldn't fit with my other, so I put it in the perennial bed, and it did great.
A new perennial, the tomato.
Exactly. Carl, I don't know if you heard, but I'm loving those cobra beans that you shared with us. I'm a fan.
Yeah, they are great.
They're fabulous.
And oddly enough, I built my corral, a cage enclosure, so no animals could get to them.
Uh-huh.
Luckily, I designed it so I can move it. I can rip it and move it. And so I'm going to put my tomatoes in there next year, too.
Yeah.
And
I think I'll do much better moving it around.
Carl,
okay,
thanks, Carl.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. You know, August is a good time to kind of look around the perennial bed, see what's blooming, where you might need some color. You know, I'm looking around, all my lilies are gone. You know, still the end of the phlox. And, you know, I got the black-eyed Susans. But this is, and Eric was talking about moving his echinacea around. This is a good time to kind of, and I take pictures throughout the season so I remember what's where, because I think I'm going to remember what color iris was there, and I never do.
Right.
So the pictures. Pictures help you see, you know, where you have room.
Yeah, late summer's a great time to walk around the yard and just take an assessment. And, you know, if you put it down on paper, it's really helpful because you, frankly, will not remember. My task this year, I've been somewhat negligent in my yard for a couple of years because I had the bad hip and kept saying, well, I'll do it next year. Well, now I have a new hip, so I'm going to do all that stuff. And we are talking about sun and shade and how plants grow. When I bought this house in 94, it was full sun.
Mm.
Now, 30-some-odd years later, it's pretty much all shade except for the area where I have my vegetable garden. And I need to make some really tough decisions about what is going to be cut down and what's going to be limbed up and what's going to be opened up, because I don't have any of my summer full sun sun bloomers anymore, except in those areas that still get some sun. So it's a great time to walk around and assess what you like, what you don't like, what's doing well, what's not doing well, what you need to, where you need to improve the soil, where you need to open something up to bring in more light and air circulation. That's something we need to pay attention to as far as disease problems.
Well, you know, I did the same thing. You know, I've had a couple of busy years where I haven't been able to get out in the garden. In the last couple of years, I've started, it got just so overgrown with so much stuff. So I started just pulling out things, making space and going, oh, I forgot about that, you know, and discovering things I had forgotten I had planted long ago. So, yeah, it's and I think I find the photos are a great help as, you know, as the season goes on and to, you know, remember, okay, you've, you know, things going to come, lilies are going to come up there. You don't want to put anything on top of those lilies.
Yeah. There is a real satisfaction in just whacking stuff back, you know? I had last summer when I had the termite inspection, the annual termite inspection done on the invoice that they sent me, there was a little pleasant note saying, it would be helpful if you trimmed back all the vegetation around your foundation because we can't see. And I'm going, well, you know they're right.
Of course they are,
And I did some, at least on the west side of the house, which was the worst offender, I had some very large shrubs, and I literally took them to the ground in September. And my attitude was, well, if they don't make it, fine. It's an opportunity to do something different. Well, you know what? They all made it, and they're coming back, but they're manageable in size right now. And I can see the foundation. So whacking stuff back is
a
not
thing.
A bad thing.
Yeah. All right, let's talk to Joyce calling from Brewster. Hi, Joyce.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a problem. I had a beautiful peach tree loaded with peaches, and then we were waiting for them to get ripe, and we go out, and all of a sudden, every peach on the tree is gone. Mm-hmm. There's no pits on the ground. They're just gone. I'm trying to figure out what would have taken them.
Raccoons.
I was going to say raccoons, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, probably raccoons. They are notorious for robbing you of the delight of having fresh peaches. Mm-hmm. And there's unfortunately not a whole lot you can do. You can try, if it's a small tree, you can try netting it. But it's tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tough competing with the critters sometimes.
Yeah. Joyce, sorry about that. Let's talk to Linda calling from Orleans. Hi, Linda.
Hi, good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Mindy, I know you're also a dahlia lover.
Yes.
And I have a dahlia question, I guess. I have these almost 6 foot tall, beautiful purple dahlias and red dahlias that this year became 2 feet with small white flowers.
Oh, my.
My goodness.
So I looked it up. I know. I went online and I looked it up, and apparently dahlias have DNA, as all living things do, and that this is not uncommon. Have you ever heard of this before?
I haven't.
I have not had that happen.
But I will say my dahlias this year, yes, I planted them late, but they're half the size that they normally are.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I mean, I have had that happen with other flowers. I remember once I had this beautiful, like, sky blue morning glory, and that was not here on the Cape. And the next year it was white. So, you know, I guess when they're, you know, hybrids, right, Roberta, they can revert back to whatever
they
were originally. So maybe that was what happened here.
Yeah. Odd.
Yeah.
These were tenderly put away, the tubers tenderly put away and everything. So
oh,
I don't know.
Goodness.
I guess I should get new ones.
Yes.
Always a great opportunity to buy some new variety.
That's right. There you go. Can never have too many dahlias, Linda.
That's right.
All right. Thanks.
Okay,
thanks for the call. Pamela's giving us a call from New Bedford. Hi, Pamela.
Hi.
Good morning.
I always love listening to this show. I have a gam plant that I bought a couple of years ago, and last summer it was really beautiful. Just it bloomed all summer as long as I clipped off the faded orange flowers. So I bought another gam because I like the first one so much, but neither one of them now is blooming. And I wasn't, you know, I'm not familiar with the plant. You know, it looked beautiful one summer, but now I have two large plants that aren't blooming. I also bought what I thought was an honoree Joubert, but it's in bloom now and it's not white, it's pink. and I'm not sure whether to keep that variety of plant in a controlled formal garden, because of the, I read that the root system is aggressive. So,
For the anemone honoree Joubert, I haven't found them to be terribly aggressive. I think they're very pretty, and they bloom late in the season, so it gives you some color a little bit later in the season. I'm not sure why the other ones didn't bloom. Every year is so different. Mm-hmm. We never know quite what to expect.
Yeah. Pamela, thanks for the call.
No.
All right. We've got a couple of tomato questions. The listener wants to know how far away you have to go to have a new location for your tomatoes. And then Jane in Eastham says she can't move the tomatoes every few years, so she wonders if there's something she can do to the soil to be able to plant them in the same location.
You know, move them as far as you have room to. That mm-hmm. would be my advice. And if you have, like I have raised beds, so I sort of rotate the beds that they're in. Mm-hmm. But inevitably, they're not that far from where they were planted the previous year. What I have found, and this will go towards the second question, what I have found helpful is to put on a good thick mulch on the surface of the soil. The spores for these diseases are present in the soil, and when it rains or when we irrigate, they're splashed up onto the lower leaves. Mm-hmm. So if you have a good thick mulch, I use this something called mainly mulch. I buy it by the bale. It's like chopped Timothy. It's attractive, and it works really well as keeping mm-hmm. soil moisture, and it helps to reduce the number of spores that splash up. The other thing I like to do with my tomatoes, and this is more important, I start trimming off the lower leaves, so eventually I have a bare stem of about 18 to 20 inches. And again, this increases the distance the spores have to travel to hit the foliage.
Right.
And as the season progresses, I'm very careful to remove the suckers. I mean, I've even gone in there with pruning shears and pruned out suckers the size of my thumb. They're whole nother stems. You want to keep the plants open so you get good air circulation.
Right. And we have I can't read the whole email because it's too long, but Harry basically has an heirloom Brandywine that's started yellowing, and he is wondering how he can avoid it for next year.
We've
been talking about, right?
Plant it in a different location, mulch it, prune off the lower leaves, and take out the suckers. And the other thing is when you do irrigate very early in the morning so the plants have an opportunity to dry off. Okay. If you irrigate late in the day, those leaves stay wet overnight, and that's perfect conditions for disease.
And likely what he's seeing is blight.
It probably is the early blight, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So just best you can do if you haven't been spraying with fungicide is just to cut off the yellow leaves and try to keep up with as much. Or when it gets to a point like mine, there's no leaves left, a couple of tomatoes, you got to pull the whole thing.
I have already pulled three tomato plants out of my garden.
Yeah, and that's pretty common. We find that a lot with the blight, especially this time of year.
Yep.
All right, horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark joins us once. We have one more session to the gardening season, Roberta.
Yes.
Goes by so fast, doesn't it?
It does.
Thanks for being with us. As always, thanks for your advice.
My pleasure.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.